Welcome to Earth's Mightiest Weirdos. We have a dual panel tonight. Part one, you can see right now, we've got Mark from Diz Life Podcast. Mark, how are you doing today?
Hello. Feeling good?
Feeling good.
Looking good. Yeah, whatever.
Good, feeling good. We just lost Piano Rob. We will get him back here in just a minute. And you can see the star of the show down at the bottom of the screen. That is not Greg from the Disney Fanatics. That is the Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rewind. Greg, how are you doing tonight?
Ahoy, hoy, my friend, and thank you so much for having me on. This is amazing, guys. This is going to be great.
We are very excited. Greg, you've ridden Cosmic Rewind 13 times now. Mark, you rode it twice.
Two times, yep.
Rob and I are both within our first 9 hours of having experienced this attraction just a single time. Rob, let's start with you. It is fresh for you. Where does this rank as an MCU fan before it ranks as a theme park fan?
I feel bad saying this because I've gotten to say this a couple of times in the last few years, but this is the best ride I've ever been on in my life.
Because of its MCU relation?
It helps, the MCU, because I feel about the MCU probably the way I think all three of you feel about Star Wars. MCU is bigger for me than Star Wars. Not by much, not in a bad way. It is for me. But the experience of this ride, like I had tears welling up. Like, and I don't get like that over an attraction. Like, I'm like, I don't even care. This was made for me, this ride.
Yeah, Mark, you are nodding in agreement.
I concur. We just talked about this on Diz Live. When I got off and I exited, my face was soaked from tears of joy and the elation of this ride. My wife, who is not a Marvel fan, I looked at her and her face was soaked. And she tried to pass it off as, well, it was just the wind. And I was like, the second time she wrote it, there was no effect that the same effect. I'm like, you got emotional, Linda. Just admit it. The visuals, everything, when taken in concert, you were overwhelmed emotionally, and that's okay too.
Greg, is it as good the 13th time as it was the first time?
Every time I ride it, I want to go right back on it. And I think after the other night riding it 9 times in a row, I walked off of it and was like, I'm good. I woke up the next morning and I missed it. I had to, I'm not kidding. I really missed doing it again. And I was lucky enough to come back and do it. Yeah, it really is.
It's that meme of Wolverine just holding the picture frame, just stroking it. Well, this is Disney's official promotional image. You can see those ride vehicles right there. The Guardians of the Galaxy are front and center. These are the ride vehicles in which you get to board. These things do not spin like a teacup from the Mad Hatter's Tea Party, much to against of what people are saying. It more rotates and shows you what they want you to look at, but it does not spin like Primeval World, for example. But we'll be a little bit less spoiler conscious to an extent. If you want absolutely nothing about this ride shown or know anything about it whatsoever, go ahead and tune out for just a couple of minutes. But we will just give small, very small MCU tie-ins. And that I will do with the Celestial of Isan. He is the main villain on this attraction. And that is really all we will say at that point. But the visuals of the attraction, seeing a Celestial that up close and being basically right in his grasps, really cool. Mark, go ahead.
The scale of this ride is something that I think that's what blows you away. Is you cannot comprehend how Disney can create something so effectively on a size and scope of this ride. And you are immersed in the experience. And like we've said this before, that Rise of the Resistance makes you feel like you're in the Star Wars narrative. I really felt at multiple points that I was living inside of the movie multiple times. And I said maybe a half dozen, if not more, how does Disney accomplish that technical feat and the size and the scope? I mean, you can see the show building and get a sense of how epic it's going to be and then still be overwhelmed by the execution of it. I knew it was going to be big and on a scale unlike anything we've seen, and I still was blown away by what I was hit with, both visually, all of my senses were engaged, and it was just incredible.
It's the biggest building I've ever seen. I feel like that's obviously not true. It's a massive building, and like I still don't know how that full ride fits inside of that building.
Neither do I.
It's unbelievable. The pre-show is absolutely incredible. There's stuff that you've never seen in there. Boys, I neglected, however. We've got the world according to Jax, and we need to get him to bed. Jax, what did you ride today?
Guardians of the Galaxy.
What did you think of Guardians of the Galaxy?
It was amazing.
Yeah? What was your, without giving anything away, what was your favorite part? Did you like the spinning, or did you like all the visuals around?
There is no spinning.
There is no spinning.
Rotate. Rotating. It rotates.
Greg, thank you, Greg. What's that? You like all of it?
I like all
of it. Okay. And you got to ride it twice. You rode it in the front and in the back. Which one did you like better?
Back.
The back. Just because it's a little faster?
Yeah.
All right. And who's your favorite Guardian of the Galaxy? Rocket Raccoon. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Jax. Did you get sick on the ride? People want to know.
No.
No. You didn't get even come close to getting sick. JC didn't get sick. Ray didn't get sick. Everybody made it out pretty good.
Hey, Brian, could you ask him if he would recommend it to everybody else to ride it?
Would you recommend it to every single person in the world to ride it?
Except babies.
Except babies. All right, cool. Yeah.
Good man.
Best answer ever.
Yes. No babies.
No babies.
Keep those babies out of Disney.
Parker, it has a 42-inch height requirement. Rob, wax poetic on anything else you want to, and then we'll get you guys out of here.
You know what? I can't wait for us to do our spoiler review because I don't want to risk saying anything. It's an experience. That's the difference. You've heard us talk about VelociCoaster. VelociCoaster is a crazy coaster. This is not as intense, but it's an experience. I don't even know what else to say. You have to don't watch a ride through. Go on it.
No,
it's not as intense. You experience it very differently. But if we're going to compare coasters, man, this is number one.
We often will talk about the storytelling in an attraction. The storytelling, even in this ride, is on a scale that Disney has never rolled out. Like this is the best storytelling that they have put out from start to finish. Again, it's a mini theatrical movie that you are living in. And I'm telling people, we flew to Florida to ride this, and I do not regret that decision. It's one that I will duplicate again and again and again. We flew just for this ride, and it was.
I will say this: when Rise came out, I was blown away by it. And we said internally that what if Disney can do this? What does the future hold? Because this was done so well. What does the future hold? They just came out with what the future holds. And now I look at this and go, what can they do next? Because they keep topping themselves. This is truly a beautiful ride. It's a wonderful experience. And I just said a little bit ago with Mark, it's when you get off that ride, you go, I had a good time. I had a great time. That was money well spent. And I enjoyed my family doing it.
And kudos to Universal, because right now there's an arms race going on in theme parks in Orlando. And we are the beneficiaries of this.
Yes, we are.
That
yes,
both of are. These parks are kicking up the theming of their new lands. They want it's all about more immersive. It's about more creative. And we're the beneficiaries of both parks trying to duke it out for your dollars.
Middle-aged men are the beneficiaries.
Yep. We've benefited greatly from this. And again, we know that we're getting Epic Universe. We know that we're getting Tron. And to echo what Greg just said, I don't even want to think of what is on the horizon because of what we're seeing now.
But we're gonna weekly on many shows.
Check out Rob on replay on the Diz Nerdy Network with his premiere tonight. Check out Diz Life Podcast, where the four of us will give that spoiler review very, very soon. Mark, is that gonna drop this week?
It will drop tomorrow afternoon, but then all of the We always say it's Wednesday so that all of the directories can get their act together, because you can upload stuff on Tuesday and it won't appear till Wednesday. But there's a lot of people who know the trick that it technically on some of those directories will come out tomorrow.
Perfect. Gentlemen, for the children, thank you so much.
Thank you.
See you later.
We will get those guys out of here. I'm going to bring Maya up so I don't go full screen before we do that. That was not going to be pretty. Hi, Maya. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you, Brian?
Thank you so much, guys. We wanted to make sure that we got that in there to be able to talk to all the MCU fans about new MCU content. It was very, very cool. It was really awesome. Jim, that is a good-looking jersey, my friend.
Well, I appreciate it. I obviously got a playoff game to watch after this.
Jim, welcome to the show. David, how are you today?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
And Maya, I said hello, but I didn't ask how you are. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good. Well, I don't think any of you guys have been able to join us for Moon Knight yet. So let's go around the circle and see where we stand. Maya, I mean, you may have been the first episode.
Yeah, first episode.
Perfect. So Maya, the first episode, we were all really big fans of it. Did you remain a big fan of it all the way through the end?
All the way through the end. Very big fan of this series.
Does it beat Loki for you?
Yes.
Wow. Breaking news.
Hmm. Yeah.
David, how about you? Were you a fan of the series from start to finish?
Yes, up until I didn't hate the finale, but it had issues.
It was fast. We'll talk about that.
I figure we're going to talk about it. Overall, yes, thumbs up.
Alex says it beats Loki for him as well. Jim, how about you?
For the most part, I enjoyed it. I will say that if Oscar Isaac was not in this show, I'm not quite sure how well it would have, how well I would have enjoyed it.
Sounds good. Fair enough. Well, let's get into it. We start right off at the beginning. Arthur kills all of the god avatars that are left, and he frees Amit. And Maya, first, what did you make of the visuals of Amit? I think she looked awesome.
Yeah, she looked great. It was kind of freaky because it was like we were anticipating what she's going to look like for me. I'm like, oh my God, it's going to be a scary crocodile. And it was that, but it wasn't as jarring as I thought it was going to be. I thought they were going to make her look a little bit more vicious.
Is she a crocodile or an alligator? I don't know the difference.
I think it's like how the teeth show, like the teeth are in, teeth are out. I don't know. One of the two.
We should bring in our resident crocodile expert, Ryan.
He's unavailable. Awesome. David, how about you? What did you make of Arthur's cane turning into an alligator at the top of it? That was cool. I really liked that. And then just freeing Amit. And you could tell they didn't have it in the budget because they killed all of the avatars completely off screen while we checked in with Layla.
Yeah. I mean, I do have a limited budget, so I understand that. My issue here is that just from the very get-go, everything just felt rushed. I did like the cane. It reminded me a little bit of an Egyptian stormbreaker, the way that kind of one edge turned into an axe and whatever the other edge was. So I would like to see a little show down there. But no, it was cool.
Yeah, much to Arthur's chagrin, that end turned into an axe because he finds that axe not that far into the future. Jim, what about you? What did you make of this whole Amit? Did you hoping for this to have happened off screen so we could have not rushed the story so much?
No, I don't. I get why they did it. At the point you brought up about, you know, budgetary issues or maybe not issues, maybe budgetary restraints or restrictions. I totally don't see why they did all the killing off screen. I thought Amit looked great. Same thing goes with the hippo. For the life of me, I cannot pronounce that god's name, so please forgive me.
Tal Red.
Yeah, I thought she looked great. The actress playing her was fantastic, very charming. So yeah, for the most part, and I'm not well versed on Egypt iconography, or maybe I just completely missed what Amit actually was going to be. But I was slightly surprised it was an alligator, but I definitely wasn't mad at it.
They did show it in like at the end of the first episode where he's in the museum and he kind of, it shows her. So it didn't shock me. What did shock me is her hair kind of turns into a tail, which was interesting. But yeah, Jim, you talk about the hippo, like her ears twitch like a hippo's ears, like in the background, like they spent their money on Amit and Tauret. And that just worked for me. I really liked it. They also spent their money on Khonshu. Mm-hmm. Layla frees Khonshu. And then immediately turns him down of, I don't sense Mark Spector. Would you be my avatar? And she's like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, absolutely not. I would never do this. But Maya, what did you make of Layla? We'll talk about her becoming an avatar here in just a little bit. But man, like Mae Calame nailed this role, especially in this particular episode for me.
Yeah, I'm happy she turned him down. Like, I do not want to see her become an avatar. And I think we all talked about like, not really wanting her to become like Moon Knight 2.0. So I actually liked how it all worked out with her character. I just wanted to go back one little thing. I thought that was interesting is that Arthur's scales did not balance. And I just thought that was the funniest thing ever because she mentions that the person who you, her other avatar who's had, who had balanced scales that did serve her is the reason why she was in stone. So it's almost like her whole existence isn't sustainable. Like for you to actually serve her, you can't even live by the rules that she, I guess, dedicates her life towards. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
She's a total hypocrite. And I had that in the outline, peek behind the curtain a little bit. I had that in the outline and I was like, man, I just, I'm getting a little bit too into the weeds here. So I'm glad you brought that up because she's willing to be hypocritical as long as it helps her achieve her goal. And then we get the line when her and Khonshu are like full blown, like Godzilla versus King Konging it up at the end. And she said, and he says like, I don't punish people until after they've been evil. And she said, yeah, I do the same thing. I just don't give them the satisfaction of committing it first. Like that's a pretty interesting moral conversation in it right there too. But Arthur, like, saying, well, I thought if I freed you, like my scales would balance and it still didn't work. So if you have to kill me, like kill me. At least he's like believes in what he's doing.
Right.
So David, how about you? What about, or no, Maya, I'm sorry. We'll go back to you on Layla. What did you make of Layla in this episode? Did you enjoy that character throughout? I'm with you. I'm glad we didn't turn her into Moon Knight 2.0. And that's how this character is going to continue. I want Oscar Isaac to stick around.
Yeah. I also struggle with Hippo Lady's name, but I did not see that coming, her becoming her avatar. But there's a scene when she becomes an avatar and she's like, Layla! I'm like, oh my gosh, I felt like it was straight out of a horror movie. That's like terrifying. I didn't mute it the second time I watched it. But I thought it was amazing. I loved how they gave her her own storyline, very different from Khonshu, Moon Knight. We get to see her in her own new like costume. We'll talk about it later, but the little superhero bit, like, are you a superhero? I thought that was a little corny. Two on the nose, but we now establish Layla as her own hero within the MCU, which is exciting.
Super on the nose, but honestly, I'm okay with it. David, what did you make of Layla in this series and specifically in this moment when she turns down Khonshu?
In the series, I thought she was great. I loved her in this part. In this episode, I'm going to have to go back. When I go back and do a rewatch, I am going to need to watch to see if becoming a superhero is something that she wants to do. Because throughout the entire series, I get a sense that, she's obviously very against what Khonshu did to Mark. She doesn't like the fact that he did that. She doesn't like the fact that he asks her to be his avatar when at the beginning of this episode, but then all of a sudden she becomes a superhero. I mean, I think it's kind of out of necessity, but I kind of want to go back to look and see if that's in her character, because I mean, a lot of issues in this episode for me had to do with things feeling rushed. And I feel like making her a super, getting her to the place where she was becoming a superhero felt rushed to me.
Well, the guy that told her you would need more than one avatar to then put Amit back in the body or whatever, like said, we need a second avatar. There's no avatars left. So I think that helped push her over the edge. And I also think Tauret is a lot easier to be an avatar for than Khonshu.
Right.
So
I mean, I got the sense when she first freed Khonshu that she was kind of making a deal with the devil.
Yeah.
Because, just out of necessity, because she had to. So maybe I could have bought it a little more if at the end of this whole ordeal, she kind of gives up being Tauret's avatar. But I do think it's cool to keep her in the MCU as a superhero for representation purposes. I know that everyone loves a good, strong female hero. She looks badass. I would love to see her and Falcon on the screen together with those wing bird themed,
persons. I love how you went Falcon. Everybody else went Wonder Woman 84 and how much this gold suit did more than that one.
I don't talk about that movie.
That movie stinks. Stephanie says superheroes in the MCU are always denying the fact that they are superheroes except for Tony Stark. But I thought it was so cool when an Egyptian girl asked if she was a hero and she's like, hell yeah, I am. So again, I thought it was a little on the nose too, but to Stephanie's point, nobody's ever really admitting it. James, I just called you James. Jim. Jimothy. Where do you stand on Layla in this show, and specifically in this episode? And we will talk about her becoming Tourette's avatar in just a bit.
I think May did a fantastic job. I knew almost, well, scratch that, I knew literally nothing about the character she would become. But she did a fantastic job. The scene with that Maya kind of alluded to, that not only was when Tawit was speaking through her, when she was speaking to Tawit through dead soldiers, I thought that was kind of funny. And again, maybe it's just like the way that the voice actress or the actress in general who voiced Tawit, just that personality and that, I guess chemistry or whatever that she was able to get with the two actors. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it too. One thing, actually, we're not quite there yet, but I do have one thing that, to the rushed point, I don't understand, and I'm hoping you guys are going to be able to help me. But before we get there, we get Mark Spector in the field of reeds. Tourette tells him, hey, you did it. Like, your scales finally balanced. Like, Steven was a necessary casualty. Maya, you didn't think Steven was going to come back. I didn't think Steven was going to come back. And Mark, full-blown, gives up eternal peace to go back to rescue Steven. And he gives him this whole speech and he says, you're the only real superpower I had. I think that as good as episode 5 was, this was another emotional part that I really, really enjoyed, played by Oscar Isaac. Go ahead, Maya.
No, I'm so happy I was wrong about that, because I was convinced that, Steven represented his trauma. So for them to like come to terms with that and leave that behind, that's how we would move forward. But like that, I think it's more now in like embracing acceptance and like, this is me as well. This is the full me and Steven. So I thought that was really beautiful. I don't know if you want to talk about like the gates opening up later.
That's my issue. So I'd love to talk about the good part of this scene before we talk about the gates opening up.
I thought it was beautiful, and I'm so happy that we got to see him just like unapologetically walk away from basically paradise to go save Steven.
David, how about you? Did it land the same way?
I thought it was interesting. I'm not the psychology expert, but I do believe when you are dealing in real life, when you're dealing with a dissociative identity disorder, the goal of therapy is to bring all the different personalities into to reconcile all of them. It's not about making one go away and just having one. It's about keeping all of them, but learning how to incorporate all of them into one, I guess, new personality. So in that sense, I think the show did a really good job of showing that Mark has to realize that Steven is a part of him. He's not like the weaker part of him, but he is a part of him. Whatever that is, he has to come to terms with it. What I don't quite understand there is that there's still a third personality that they both don't know about. And how can their scales balance when they don't know there's an entire other part of them that is going around, you know, doing things they're not aware of? So I like what they showed in terms of how they reconcile, but I don't quite understand.
It's not fully reconciled.
It's not fully reconciled. And I know we're about to get there, but I don't understand how you can just decide to leave the afterlife like that.
Well,
like it's a theme park or something. I don't know.
I was thinking like that too, Dave. I was super confused, but it almost felt like Mark only created Steven.
Therefore,
I don't know if he ever actually created Jake. And I don't know, maybe because we go back to his memories and see how Steven was essentially birthed. I don't know if we're going to find out later. There's another period in his life where he basically birthed Jake, but the fact that Mark doesn't know Jake exists makes me wonder. That's the reason why like Mark and Steven are kept over here and Jake is on this side and not necessarily messing with the scales, but it is confusing.
Yeah, that's a good point, Maya. I didn't think about that. We never really see how Jake is created.
Mm-hmm. Which we better. Like, that's all I'm going to say. This show's over after one season. I'm upset. Jim, what did you make of this Mark and Steven coming back together?
I loved it, honestly. One of the couple of things I did love. Credit goes to Oscar Isaac, just acting with himself, at least on screen. But you know, it's been his brother there on set. I think that's where a lot of the emotion came from, because it's clear that, you know, having your brother there, at least in my opinion, would probably help get you through some of those tougher scenes. And I think Oscar did a fantastic job.
So Stephanie says, brings us right to it. She said, I assume Tourette asked Osiris to let them out. Don't know where I got that impression. You got that impression because she turns the boat around and says, let's go to the gates of Osiris to try to get you out of here. But why? Like, the avatar for Osiris was that bald
investment banker.
Yeah, the investment banker guy. He was the avatar for Osiris. Like, so I guess he's a god, so therefore he's seeing what's happening both in the underworld and on Earth, and goes, okay, yeah, we need Mark back. So they just kind of decide. Was he eavesdropping on Mark's entire speech? To like, where I don't get it is, why did the gates open? I don't get it. Can anybody help me?
I think it was because he had that reconciliation with Steven, and that, because I'm pretty sure once they, like, you know, hold hands and do all that stuff, their heart like lights up bright yellow,
yeah,
signifying that their scales are finally balanced, and so he could be allowed into.
Life. That's not even the field of reeds. That's where I'm a little bit confused. Maya, did you have any theories?
Yeah. So after my first watch, I was also very confused, and I think when investment banker Osiris is talking to Layla, like, you have to free Khonshu. My guess was, okay, well, freeing Khonshu is also like a way to free Mark, and he knows Mark is on the other side. So kind of like helping Layla push forward her plan for the sake of saving everyone else from Amit.
And nobody that really likes, my nobody really way likes of Khonshu, thinking so they don't want to subject anybody else to Khonshu, maybe.
Maybe, or just the fact that, because Khonshu, and this is another question, I don't know, no one who isn't a god or an avatar can see other gods, right? So when Amit and Khonshu are fighting, no one can see it except for their avatars and other gods, correct?
I really hope not, because that would
be
if you've ever seen.
Like, so that's, I feel case. Like,
yeah. This is a world
where Ultron, Khonshu to have like his full power, he's going to need his avatar. So if he's telling Layla, you know, free Khonshu, maybe that's what he has in the back of his head.
But I guess she could see him because she freed him, even though she wasn't an avatar at this point. Like, this is where we can't think too hard on it.
Yeah. That's Jim, my roundabout way of thinking it.
Sure. All that makes sense, at least in my mind. I'm like, all right, you know, maybe, you know, Steven and Mark finally coming together and all that unlocked the power of love, like, Care Bear style or something. I don't know.
Well, let's move on to something that I do understand and that I picked up on the first watch. Not a problem. Steven and Mark talking about how they're a package deal, going back and forth, talking to Khonshu. I thought it was fantastic. Khonshu agrees, I will release the both of you. You have my word. Those are the exact quotes. Jim, you're nodding along. You picked up on what I picked up on. In case people aren't quite getting it, what did they miss?
Jake, clearly. I mean, he didn't lie. Next season, Khonshu can say, where's the lie? You're both free.
I released both of you. That's the thing to me, is Khonshu's dirty, man. He's been keeping this third personality a complete secret from everybody. What I don't know is why, like, Layla's like, what was that? Like, why is everybody else keeping Jake a secret from Mark? Like, they're not mentioning this white and black suit that I would assume Jake has.
So a good point.
I don't know why nobody's bringing it to Mark's attention, because Jake's simply getting him out. Like, it's clearly Jake is the one that took over in the Swiss Alps in the very first episode. It wasn't Mark like we thought. But Khonshu's been keeping this third personality a secret. And then he gets all Mr. Knight dappered up to commit murder. Maya, what did you make of Khonshu agreeing to release the both of them? Did you pick up on this as well, assuming we were going to get Jake at some point?
Yeah. Well, the first watch, I didn't pick up on it until, like, at the end. I'm like, oh, crap, you said both. Yeah. But that was a good point that you mentioned, Brian, around, yeah, like, clearly he's going to have a third costume. And so no one else is mentioning, hey, this other guy who just took control of the body. Yeah, I thought that. And I also thought, like, if
it's some super violent stuff.
Yeah. And then, like, when it happened earlier in the season, and then Steven and both Mark are like, was that you? No, it wasn't me. Like, wouldn't you explore that a little bit? So, I mean, obviously, it's for the sake of the story. It's very minor.
So I did go back to that episode where Mark's like, Steven, what did you do? And Steven said, I swear it wasn't me. Khonshu shows up right away and completely changes like the topic of discussion where they end up taking the kid to the edge of the cliff.
Bastard.
So like Khonshu's dirty, man. Like, David, what did you make of all this?
The first time I saw it, I got the sense that Khonshu was a little kid who had his fingers crossed behind his back when telling his mom to eat the cookies.
Well, he's kind of done. He's kind of earned that reputation. So,
right. A little child. In fact, then they bring that up in the show that he's kind of acts like a little child at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's justice.
Yeah. what's interesting to me is that, so, well, when we got in the, I think last week we got the flashback. When Mark, you know, first crawls to the shrine, and Khonshu says, "Ooh, your mind is fractured." Like, did he pick up and sense that Jake at that moment? And like, was he really after Jake? Because he wants an avatar that is going to kind of do his bidding, you know, take out or protect travelers of the night at any cost or whatever the cost is. Like, did he know that Jake was in there and Jake had that potential, that capability, and Mark was just like the not the cover, but you know, the one who
can I go tinfoil hat here? I don't think Jake existed. I think Mark and Steven were the only two existed at that point in time. And then throughout his acts as Moon Knight is where Jake was then developed to handle the extremely violent things that were going on. That's where I think Jake came into play. And I think Khonshu probably saw the ability, but simple fact was Mark was already a mercenary, already doing fairly violent things. So even if he was only looking back in Mark's past, I think he at least saw capability there. And then, but I can see Mark not being cool with some of this and somehow developing this third personality, and Khonshu was all about it. That's how I see it. When Mark came back to life, something that I saw is they played that scene over again. It's almost like, I think it was kind of happening in real time where Mark had to like re-vow to like be Moon Knight again, basically, before those bullets came out of his chest and stuff, which was interesting. But my theory is, and I really hope we explore it, is Jake actually didn't exist at that moment in time.
That's interesting.
He didn't exist when?
When Mark became Moon Knight the first time.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's interesting. I wonder even if this is just a thought. I don't know that I could back this up right now, but I wonder if the night that Bushman killed that whole group of archaeologists, maybe that was the night that Jake was created.
Which was the same night he became Moon Knight. So
you're right. That is.
So, I mean, okay. That could all happen on the same day. That absolutely could all happen on the same day. It would make sense.
Whatever it is, I think it's an interesting mystery, and I hope that they touch upon it whenever he shows up next.
Jim, yeah, I'm like, what's the profile of inspiration? Because out of Stephen Grant, it's like, you know, the Indiana Jones-esque. So I'm wondering, like, what is going to be the inspo behind I think he's Hispanic or Latino, or like Spanish. Everything about him.
Yeah.
Everything about, we're like, okay, so I'm curious to know how that came about.
Maybe him and America Chavez could have a conversation. No Doctor Strange spoilers. Jim, you got anything else here before we move on to Layla becoming an official avatar?
I mean, the wheels are turning. I'm not quite sure if anything's, you know,
moving
coming up. Yeah, if anything's moving. But like, it's an interesting point you bring up, Brian, because I thought like Jake could have been. Mark created Steven. Could Steven have created Jake?
This is like Multiplicity with Michael Keaton.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, okay, I was rewatching the first episode yesterday, and you know, it's kind of, I don't know if it's a throwaway scene, but like, did Mark ask out the girl for the steak dinner, or was that Jake?
I think that was Jake.
I hope it's Jake because Mark's married.
Yeah, because Mark was really had feelings for Layla, and I'm pretty sure, you know, anyone, if not necessarily a strange man, but if a man comes up to a woman and, you know, starts speaking Spanish in a very, very nice way, I'm pretty sure almost anything can happen at that point. But I mean, that's just something after watching that episode. I was like, huh, what if
I mean, Buzz Lightyear proved that, right?
Absolutely.
Stephanie says, so we do not think Jake was Mark's quote unquote partner who killed Layla's father. I did believe that. I no longer do once they name drop Bushman, who's a completely separate character. Again, being inspired from the comic books, Mark clearly doesn't know Jake exists at this point. So that is why, even though Mark should have put it together, there was a third sarcophagus. I do think I no longer believe that partner was an extra personality personally.
And that's why I think that sarcophagus was there to show why Steven and Grant, like Jake wasn't kind of in the conversation about their fate and their scales balancing. He was tucked away in his sarcophagus because I don't know.
He still was Steven until they let him out. So had they let Jake out, we don't know what would have happened.
Oh, yeah. Steven was in his
he was in a sarcophagus. And I mean, I don't know if it was Jake just desperately trying to get out, but he was that sarcophagus was shaking pretty violently. So I don't know if that's necessarily, you know, the violent nature of Jake's personality, or it's just like the desperation to get out. I don't one
or
of the two
of mine. Or all of
it. Or all of it. Yeah, all of it. Who knows?
Let's talk about something more fun. May Calamay, I was in on Layla, like after she took that necklace off and stabbed that dude. I thought that was awesome. This scene where the building is literally crumbling around her and she's having a discussion with herself and Tourette just has no sense of urgency whatsoever. And she's saying, your father's going to be so happy, and how happy that makes Layla. Like, Maya, go ahead. Layla turning into Tourette's avatar and becoming the Scarlet Scarab, teasing how pretty her costume is that we see a few minutes later. I thought this was my favorite scene of the entire episode.
Yes, despite the Layla, was great.
I thought that was great.
Yeah, it was creepy, but it was good.
I found it as simple humor. So I'll have to go back after watching Doctor Strange with a creepy.
Right. But I mean, it was, like I said earlier, it was just amazing. And I'm so happy that they kind of gave her her own hero route. And granted, I don't know with the future of, you know, these characters, you know, is it sustainable to constantly be an avatar? I mean, maybe Layla and Hippo Lady can have like a more amicable relationship, but it is interesting to see like a kind of like a characters where you take away the avatar and it's like, okay, what's going to happen?
Layla made it clear that it was temporary on her part.
Right. But she's badass without being an avatar. So it's going to be great to see her. But in terms of having that whole superhero moment, it makes me think that she's going to sustain these powers in some capacity.
Fair enough. I just, Tourette seems like she's a lot easier to get along with. I think she's the goddess of fertility and joy, fertility and something.
Yeah.
But her costume was incredible. Like I said, the gold wings did it better than Wonder Woman 84 because, hey, she didn't drop them on the ground the second she landed. I really liked everything about that. I thought she looked awesome. The Scarlet Scarab is a cool name. Again, a little bit on the nose. Are you an Egyptian hero? Sure. But it was still cool. Like, I liked it. David, what did you make of Layla becoming issues the fertility and rebirth? So
fertility and childbirth, and also associated with nursing of infants.
Well, there you go.
Which is interesting because I just learned that hippos are the number one cause of death of animals, of humans.
Also, one thing we skip is when Steven and Mark are trying to get to the gates of Osiris and she comes in and plows the boat through like, all the dust.
That
and
was Steven's awesome.
Just like, hippo!
Right.
Osiris, you old. What did she say? Osiris, you old.
You old softy.
Scarlet Scarab, David.
What?
The Scarlet Scarab.
Scarlet Scarab, right. I thought it was really cool because I felt like the entire show, that's the actress, Layla, was, she wasn't one note, but she definitely had like a personality, right, throughout this whole show. And then all of a sudden there's this 180 that she takes when she's inhabited by Tourette. And I think it was like, oh, I didn't know that this could have been a totally different actress or character. Like, just from the from a meta level, seeing that she could play these two parts interchangeably, it was like seeing Oscar Isaac go back and forth between Mark and Steven at the beginning of the show. So I thought it was really cool that you could have, you could see these two characters, these two characters who are both inhabiting different versions of themselves, different gods, and holding different gods inside them. It's, you kind of see why they're a good couple. And I kind of want to see the conversation the two of them have after this about what it's like to be a god's avatar. But I did like I said before, I did like the costume. I wish they'd spend a little more time in getting us there, because it, when Marvel does this, they throw all these things in the last episode, it goes from feeling like a Marvel show or movie to feeling very CW-ish. And if you watch any CW shows, you might know what I mean, but like in the CW shows, things,
or Wonder Woman 84.
Things just kind of happen and you're like, okay, cool, but how did we get here? That's what this felt a lot like. But I felt like when she got there, they did the character justice. They gave her some great character moments, some great points. Maya and Jim said, I'm excited to see where they go in the future. The costume's really cool. Did she give up the persona at the end? I didn't feel
she's still it.
Yeah. So I don't know. It'll be cool to see where they go, considering they kind of introduced her with a half an hour left in the show.
She would fit in. She would fit in well with the Eternals. Like, even if Oscar Isaac doesn't come back, if we have this Scarlet Scarab with Cersei and those guys, I think that would work.
I almost forgot to say something. It'll be quick, but I thought it's cool when Hippo Lady was telling her about her dad. So we may see her give us an understanding of other people who've passed away. So we could get her, like, the Hippo Lady telling us about Tony in the Field of Reeds or wherever, afterlife for human. So that's going to be cool to see.
She did lay the groundwork that not everybody's afterlife is the same. We've only seen three of them. We've seen the Soul World. We've seen the Ancestral Plane, which she name dropped. And then we've seen the Field of Reeds. So yeah, I want to know like what that place was like during the snap. Like I want to get really weird. You go ahead.
What's interesting is that, you know, Mark Spector is a Jewish character, but he is beholden to the Egyptian, not theology, but the Egyptian, you know, afterlife.
Afterworld.
Mm-hmm. So what makes me really curious and going forward is that Marvel has obviously decided that in this world they're going to make it known that gods exist, right? We know Thor, so the world knows that Norse gods exist. I have to assume at some point, like the Roman gods, you know, we're getting Zeus and Thor, Love and Thunder. Whether or not people of Earth know he exists is different, but we've also had a celestial pop up from the Earth and appear in the sky. If they could see them, they've now seen two giant Egyptian gods fighting in Cairo. Like, if you're a normal person in this world, what is your theology at this point? Do you believe in God? Like, what does this do to the cosmology or the belief system of the world?
There's only one God, ma'am, and he doesn't dress like that.
Maybe he does.
you brought up a point that I don't want to hound on too much, but I don't know why Marvel's allergic to a seventh or an eighth episode. Loki, Hawkeye, and this show all suffered from wrapping up too quickly, even to an extent WandaVision, and it went 9 episodes. It could have benefited from that mythical 10th episode. It must be a budget thing. It's obviously a timeline thing, but this is the second show in a row. Hawkeye wrapped, Spider-Man came out the next day. Moon Knight wrapped, Doctor Strange came out the next day. You're not giving your shows the finale the chance to breathe either. So honestly, if Moon Knight was the seventh episode and wrapped this week, it'd get a little bit more attention.
I liken this to, so if you remember going back to the early days in phase one and phase two, people loved to rip on Marvel for having a villain problem. And I kind of take it how they were still figuring out how are MCU movies different from all the superheroes stuff that came before. And I think one of the things they had to figure out was, how are we going to make our villains different? And I feel like it's the same thing here, where the Disney Plus shows are now a new thing for Marvel. There is a precedent, obviously, of superhero TV coming before this. And I feel like the finale problem is going to be, when we look back on it, the villain problem of phase one and phase two. I hope that in these later shows, they start to figure out how to do a finale that doesn't feel rushed. What doesn't make sense, though, is that how all the episodes before this were almost an hour long, and for some reason this was 45 minutes. I don't know if that's a Disney thing or a Marvel thing. I hope they figure it out. But for me, my thoughts on the entirety of a series almost becomes, what did I think of the episodes before the finale? And then the finale kind of tips the balances, because in some cases it has pushed it one way, in other situations it's pushed it a different way. So I hope they figure out a way to give these finales the treatment that, you know, deserving of what the rest of the show before it has been.
That makes Jim, sense. Any thoughts there? And then we will wrap up this show as fast as the episode did, because we are running a little bit long.
Just really quick, I loved the look of Scarlet Scarab. Like I said, I'm not familiar with that particular superhero, but I really loved the moment with the girl about asking, "Are you an Egyptian superhero?" Like, I understand it might be on the nose, but sometimes being on the nose is kind of what you need.
Like, go back to hell.
No, I don't care. I dug that.
No, I know. Okay. Perfect. So let's keep going. We see a really fun fight scene between Arthur Harrow versus Layla and legitimately Mark and Steven. Watching Mark and Steven switch back and forth between suits, personalities, watching them all work together is something we've built for this entire show. I really enjoyed it. Maya, I know you are a resident Steven stan. I'm sure you really loved this.
It was great. It was amazing. I have nothing else to say other than that, because it's just perfect.
It was an absolute blast. We get a third personality. They're getting everything taken away. Jake saves the day. He blacks out the same way he did in the Alps, but we don't see it. And I really was very frustrated that we didn't see it. If you're going to reveal it at that point, if they reveal it the way they did, and we'll talk about that Jake Lockley scene here in a minute, if we don't get a season two, this show immediately drops down the level for me, because the entire intrigue of Jake Lockley and how he gets out of those situations, like, honestly, season two for me could be a redo of season one, except filling it in with Jake Lockley's memories. Like, I need to understand what's going on. Jim, were you taken out of it like I was, really bummed again we didn't get that personality?
I wouldn't say I was bummed, but, you know, once probably halfway through, I was like, okay, they gotta show Jake at some point. But I understand that, you know, you have to build that relationship between Mark and Steven. Now, I don't know if it would be in another season. You know, maybe it might be in a film. I'm not quite sure, because you're really just focusing on one new character.
Oscar Isaac claims he's done, and I don't buy it. I would be.
Really, I don't buy. Yeah, I don't buy it either. Like, yeah. You know, whatever contract he signed, I don't buy it either. Because, I mean, let's be honest, he's probably been treated better in this series than probably X-Men and Star Wars combined. But that's just my hope. Yeah, I definitely think we're going to see not just Mark, Steven, all these characters again. But yeah, I think we have to see Jake again at some point. It's just a matter of what, if it's a show or a movie, which I kind of think it might be a movie.
David, I use the word bummed because that's where I was. I wanted to see how violent and how crazy that could have been, of him getting out of that situation with the axe, the Egyptian Stormbreaker, as you put it, ending up in Arthur Harrow's forehead, not killing him. But anyway, David, were you bummed like I was?
I don't. Bummed is not the word. I think confused was one. At least until the post-credit scene came, and then I guess if you spoil Jake there, then the post credit, then you don't have, you can't have that post credit scene. Although Jake is revealed in the end scene in Putnam. I know we're not there yet, but that's kind of where Jake is first revealed. So we didn't get it. We didn't get it. You can tell by the accent. Go back and watch it. There's a, his accent.
It's a weird accent, but I just thought it was Mark stuck in Stevens. You think it's completely different?
It's all three person. I just watched it before we started. It's all three personalities, Mark, and then the accent changes first to, for Jake, and then it goes to Steven. So that's kind of the first real reveal that, that there's three of them.
I haven't taken my own advice and watched this with subtitles. I wonder how they differentiate Steven to Mark to... That's interesting.
Yeah, it's very subtle. I think, and I think even before this, if you go, if you rewatch the series, that accent also pops up in a couple places. So I think the intent was to keep Jake hidden till the end. If anything, just if not, well, first not to show that violence, because they had to, they wanted to obviously put that all that into Doctor Strange, but
or Blade.
Yeah, bummed was not the word. Confused was until I realized, until we saw the Putnam scene and then also the post-credit scene.
Yeah, I don't know if Jake was completely hidden. Like, they were dropping hints. Like, we knew Jake was coming at some point. The second somebody in a black coat put his hand on Arthur Harrow's shoulder, I knew we were getting Jake at that point. That made a ton of sense. But that accent thing is interesting. I'm going to have to watch it with subtitles to see how they differentiate at least Mark and Steven talking. When they're not Mr. Knight, because that last scene in the Putnam facility, let's get right to it, because I don't think we really have to talk much about Amit getting trapped inside Harrow. Simply, Mark won't kill him. So, Jim, let's go to you on this Putnam facility. His feet are bleeding. We started the show with him putting glass in his shoes. That would make your feet bleed, but I don't think that that's why. But Arthur Harrow's feet are bleeding, and we're watching Steven and David thinks Jake and Mark having a conversation all with each other. What do you make of what's happening here and why are we back in the Putnam facility?
I think the Putnam facility was just kind of like Mark and Steven's way station.
Okay.
A place where they could coexist, other than obviously outside of the field of reeds and, you know, the sand desert with the hippo lady and all that. I think that's the closest thing I can think of to describe where they can both not just exist, but interact and, you know, not necessarily come up with a plan, but, you know, actually, you know, survive. David does bring up a good point because I thought I heard something change in his voice. But I was like, okay, that can't be that big of a deal. But now that David mentioned, I'm like, oh, okay. I did pick up on it for a split second, but obviously it didn't last long enough in my brain to figure out like, oh, that is something. But now that I hear him, I'm like, okay, all right. I wasn't crazy after all, especially weird considering watching the show.
It's right when he stands up out of the chair is where it's really noticeable. But I just really thought, it was like, man, asking Oscar Isaac to go between all these accents, I just kind of let it roll off my back. If that really is a Japanese, that's pretty intense. Maya, what did you make of this final Putnam scene? And we'll talk about Jake and we'll get out of here.
Honestly, have no idea. I was confused about the Putnam facility since the first time we saw it. I'm like, is this somewhere, like, because they kept going back between that facility and then their mission to balance the scale. So I'm like, what is this place? Cause it's clearly different from, it's like a side mission almost, or like a side mental state. So I figured it was somehow wrapping up the last time we saw them in the facility. I genuinely have no idea.
Fair enough. David, anything else on the facility?
Before this episode, I would have said one thing, but I think the facility is meant to be Jake's or the three of theirs psyche, like figuring things out. The episode, I guess, was it 4 or 5 when we first see them in the facility?
Very end of 4.
End of 4. Okay. I think it's his at that time in episode 4 and 5, I think it's the sick version of their mind. And then whatever happens to allow them to, I guess after they go to the duat, they figure all their stuff out and it's their mind kind of healing itself. What I wasn't sure about before this was, is Harrow real or is the Doctor real? And I think it was the episode when they bring Harrow before the gods and Harrow says to Mark, I'd like to speak to Steven. To me, when I first heard that, it sounded very much like something a psychologist would say. And so I don't know if that in his mind made Steven a doctor. It keeps the whole question of what the hell is going on here. But I think that mental hospital is his psyche trying to fix itself. And it's not till the very end, till he reconciles with Steven. I guess he knows that maybe he's starting to understand that Jake's there because they know that there's a third person because he says, that wasn't you, Steven, was it? So they know there's obviously something going on. So I think it's just his mind starting to heal itself or being healed and realizing he doesn't need an outside force like Harrow or a doctor to kind of fix him.
Interesting. If we get a season two that helps me figure it out, I'm happy. We meet Jake Lockley by having Harrow wheeled out. I mean, the second the hand goes on Harrow's shoulder, I knew that we were getting the Jake Lockley reveal that we had been anticipating. Then the guy, the orderly at the hospital is dead. And then Arthur is loaded into the back of a limo where Khonshu is dressed up for prom, looking just like Mr. Knight with his entire Mr. Knight suit. And Harrow and Amit really just teasing Khonshu. Hey, you can't do anything. And just simply knocks on the window. We get our Jake Lockley reveal where he speaks Spanish and said, today is not your day. And we get full blown James Bond silencer shots in a limo with the SPKTR license plate, the Spectre license plate. Really, really fun post credit scene and is absolute garbage if we don't complete this story somehow, some way. Maya, what do you make of this post credit scene and any predictions for what the future may hold for the character of Moon Knight?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, I thought it was, I'm happy that it was, I'm actually totally okay that we only saw Jake in the post credit. I was kind of like David, I was totally fine with only seeing that and then focus on other things. But I do think there, and like in terms of the future of the franchise, it'd be interesting to explore, like if once, I don't know if Jake knows about Mark and Steven, like genuinely don't know, maybe. But if so, understanding, maybe kind of feeling like the left out best friend. So it's like they see they've had this really strong relationship. Yeah, and like you're like, oh man, they're having fun. I'm being controlled. Like I'm wondering if we see some sort of Jake wanting to break free because of Mark and Steven's relationship. I don't know, but I genuinely don't even know if Jake knows about them, but I'm excited. I have no idea where the next time we'll see Moon Knight, any of these characters. I'm just in it for the ride.
I was completely fine with it being self-contained. There's been all these reports of there was an Eternals character and then there was this and then there was that. Like Echo could have appeared here. Like honestly, I'm good with this story being super self-contained, but I'm not done with it. That's just where I'm at. David, how about you?
Mm-hmm. If they don't bring him back somewhere, then what the hell?
Yeah, they just need to bring him back.
Why do that post-credits scene if this is the end? I will say I do think if they do bring him, what's the name of the team up that he's in? Is it Sons of Darkness?
I Midnight Sons.
Midnight Sons. And that's also what Blade and
Midnight Sons.
Midnight Sons. Thank you. If they do that, I think we'll see him there. I think this series would have been the way to explain what the hell is up with this guy who has multiple personalities, because you can't do all this in a movie and still do the rest of the movie. So this may have been a way to set up Mark's psychological situation. And if he does go into a team up with Midnight if you do a Midnight Suns team up with more violent characters, perhaps that's where Jake fits in, where we'll get a more violent version.
Deadpool, Blade.
Yeah,
Deadpool, Blade, and Moon Knight. Give me those guys on the screen. Jim, what make of you of this post-credit scene and the future of the character?
I liked it. I liked how Jake clearly does not care at all. He just straight up kicks away the wheelchair. I thought that was kind of funny. But yeah, I mean, kind of like I said earlier, I think the future of the character is, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Moon Knight next in a movie in some respects. I mean, I can totally see a season two type deal. I mean, it all depends on what his shooting schedule is with Dune coming up and all that. But I think, yeah, it's going to be either a movie or a series. It's not limited to either of the two.
And he's not done either.
I fully don't believe he's done, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, if he loves this character, why would he not come back?
Yeah. I mean, just based on the acting I saw in the series from him, it's clear he was invested. Like, especially the stuff, the scene on the street. Leaving his mother's funeral, couldn't go in, all that. Like, he seemed emotionally, physically invested. So I would be shocked if he didn't come back for anything. So I'm like, yeah, it's gotta be, right?
David, do you mind if I put you on the spot here for just a second? Feature Modern Gods podcast a little bit, being a little bit closer to Jewish tradition and everything that they did portray in Mark Spector's Jewish religion, especially around, I apologize, what is the funeral called?
Shiva.
The Shiva. Yes. Thank you. Was there anything around there that the general audience may have missed that you would like us to have picked up on? Covered, which was an interesting thing, which is normal to Jewish tradition, correct?
What was that? The mirrors?
The mirrors were covered.
Yeah, they did cover the mirrors. So for people watching, I had speculated that, so we saw Mark talking through mirrors in the beginning of the show. And when you go to a Jewish funeral, it is tradition to cover up all your mirrors because the idea is that you want the focus to be on the person who died and not on yourself. So you don't want to be looking at yourself. So they did cover the mirrors. I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but I was thinking that, you know, we don't know when he started talking in mirrors to people. Although actually, now that I think about it, he doesn't create Steven, I think, until after that moment. So he wouldn't be afraid to talk in a mirror.
Yeah.
But going back to your question, they didn't spend too much time on it. It did look like a funeral, like a Shiva, the mirrors covered. The sense that I get is that they didn't want to delve too much into the religious aspect because, again, I don't know if anyone else was thinking about this, but they had a Jewish character kind of going through Egyptian religion. I'm not sure what the word is, but
right.
So I don't know how much attention they wanted to draw to that. I think if anything, it may have also just been a nod to the comics, the history in the comics of the character. There was nothing that overtly stuck out and said, this is nothing. They would never do this at a Shiva or in Jewish tradition. So I think they did it right. If anything, they may have, the only like sin they had was showing, super ultra orthodox with the hats, the black hat. That's kind of, I feel like that's an entertainment trope when you want to convey the fact that someone's Jewish, they go to the very end of the spectrum. I wouldn't call it a complaint. It's just one thing that I noticed, but overall, yeah, I think they did a decent job with what they showed.
Thank you for letting me put you on the spot there. Check out Modern Gods podcast for stuff like that and pop culture and all that kind of stuff. Jim, what do you have going on? Agents of Shield on Wednesdays. You're a big part of that podcast, which is here on the Nerd Life Network. The Avs are going to sweep the Preds tonight.
I really hope that's the case. I cannot join this week because of work obligations with the NBA playoffs. But yeah, we have a great time on there. My entire shtick is just pick one of my mini jerseys just to see what I can wear for that day. It's very Dean Pelton from Community, if you will. I've another podcast I was a part of, a bit of a hiatus at the moment. Sports Porch, you can find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. Go back to listen to that back catalog. I'm pretty sure we'll be firing that up again soon. But yeah, that's pretty much all you can find me there.
Maya on Instagram @MiveFashion. at Into the Mayaverse and at Nerdy Girls After Dark. What is going on with the Nerdy Girls After Dark?
Yeah, so we have an episode coming up this Thursday, topic TBD. But I know with a lot, the Moon Knight finale, Doctor Strange last week, we did record and publish a Mother's Day episode talking about breaking generational cycles. So if anyone, I know most people probably haven't got to it yet. If you want a good, feel good episode, I felt like that was a lot of great content, featured my mother, Kara's mother, Doreen, Jalen and Sarah on it. And I just think it's just a great episode. So check it out if you haven't already.
On the Nerd Life Network at Nerdy Girls After Dark or anywhere you find your podcast, just search for Nerdy Girls After Dark. We will end this show with Alex saying Oscar is just like Layla. She's saying she's simply a temporary avatar. Oscar Isaac will be back in the MCU. Until next time, laters, gators.
Earth's Mightiest Weirdos is brought to you by Pinch of Pixie Dust Travel. People who love travel understand that life isn't about the breaths you take, it's about the moments that take your breath away. That's why we help coordinate the most magical adventures for you and your family. Disney, Universal, Sandals, Norwegian, Carnival, and more, we are a full-service concierge travel agency that will help with every aspect of your journey. Let us take care of the details while you enjoy your family. Get a quote today by calling us at 570-832-7798 or fill out a trip request form at pinchofpixiedusttravel.com. Just follow the second star to the right straight on to your adventure. That's pinchofpixiedusttravel.com, where you're making memories one trip at a time.